Hi everyone, welcome back to Daily Gospel Exegesis. We're going to do a verse-by-verse exegesis of the text, as we always do. So this is the Gospel reading you'll hear at today's Mass. I'll read through it all once, and then we'll have a go at breaking it down to see if we can work out what did it mean in its original context. We're doing a proper Bible study of the text. So today's reading is John chapter 6, verses 16 to 21. In the evening, the disciples went down to the shore of the lake and got into a boat to make for Capernaum on the other side of the lake. It was getting dark by now, and Jesus still had not rejoined them. The wind was strong and the sea was getting rough. They had rowed 3 or 4 miles when they saw Jesus walking on the lake and coming towards the boat. This frightened them, but he said, "It is I. Do not be afraid." They were for taking him into the boat, but in no time it reached the shore at the place they were making for. So what's the context of this reading? We're looking at John's version of Jesus walking on the water. So Jesus has just fed the 5,000 near the Sea of Galilee. That was earlier on the same day. At the end of that story, Jesus goes alone up into the hills around the Sea of Galilee. So he goes up there to pray. And he basically tells the disciples that he wants them to go on ahead and he's going to meet them later. Now we have here Jesus walking on the water. This is a famous story, though usually we hear Matthew or Mark's version. John has his own version of Jesus walking on the water. This is one of the few stories in John that also appears in the Synoptic Gospels. Only Luke doesn't have an account of Jesus walking on the water. So obviously John, who is probably aware of Matthew and Mark's versions, he felt that he had something else to add here. Or maybe he felt it was important for his audience to hear it again because of the point he's trying to make in his gospel, which is all about Jesus' identity as the Son of God. So starting at verse 16, in the evening, so this is after the 5,000 have gone away, Jesus has gone away as well up to the hills. And it's probably not that long after the multiplication of the loaves, because remember, the disciples, the whole reason why Jesus multiplied the loaves was the disciples were concerned that it was getting close to evening and people wouldn't have food. So now we see it's in the evening. So it's probably only an hour later, maybe, after the multiplication of the loaves. Now we're going to see here Jesus walking on water. It's important we say up front that it seems that Jesus was probably planning to do this miracle all along. He felt that the timing was right to do this miracle, but in order to walk out on the water, he needed the disciples to be in the water without him. So he arranges for them to be out on the water at a time when he's not. So the disciples went down to the shore of the lake. So they're going down to the Sea of Galilee. Now, some believe that John here is deliberately phrasing this in an interesting way. There's references all through this story to Psalm 107. Psalm 107 is a psalm about how God helps his people. And in verse 23 of that psalm, it says, "God will help those who go down to the sea in ships." So here, John says, the disciples went down to the shore of the lake. Maybe there's supposed to be a deliberate connection there that John thinks his readers would notice. Verse 17, they got into a boat to make for Capernaum on the other side of the lake. So if you look at a map, at this point, the disciples are on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. It appears that that's where they did the multiplication of the loaves. And now they're going to Capernaum on the western side. It's actually not very far to cross the Sea of Galilee. It's only about 5 miles across. It makes sense for them to be going to Capernaum because that's their home base in Galilee. So they're probably going home, essentially. That's where Jesus and Peter live, and they spend a lot of time there. We know from the other Gospels that Jesus told them to go in that direction. It was getting dark by now, and Jesus still had not rejoined them. So Jesus, remember, had promised that he would rejoin them later in the day. Well, he still hasn't done it. So it's getting dark now. Verse 18, the wind was strong, and the sea was getting rough. Now, more literally, what it says, the sea rose. So we're talking here about a fairly significant storm on the Sea of Galilee. And the Sea of Galilee was quite prone to these kinds of storms because the wind would come down the mountains and it could bring about quite significant storms. Now, if you look at Mark's version of this story, Mark gives us some more information. He tells us that Jesus, from where he is up on the hills, he can actually see them out on the boat and he can see that they're struggling. In fact, Mark tells us that Jesus does not walk out on the water until the fourth watch of the night, and that's about 3 a.m. So that's pretty significant. It seems like they got into the boat in the evening at some time, just after sunset. So if we say they got into the boat at 8 p.m. and they started rowing, well, they don't get there till 3 a.m. So it must be quite a significant storm, and they really are struggling. Verse 19, they had rowed 3 or 4 miles, so they're getting close to finishing their journey because the Sea of Galilee is only 5 miles across. They're now 3 or 4 miles across, so they're very close to Capernaum now. And then they saw Jesus walking on the lake and coming towards the boat. So here we have one of Jesus' most famous miracles. He walks on the water. Why does he do it? It seems like the main reason he does the walking on the water is to display his power. It's to convince them, to convince the disciples of his identity. He's showing them that he has power over nature. He wants them to realize that he is the Son of God. And he believes the timing is right to show them this. Now, there's no explanation of how Jesus actually does this miracle, as we don't get explanations of most of the miracles. Certainly it's a miracle, though. It's presented as a miracle. It's not Jesus walking on platforms under the water, as you'll hear some people say in a bizarre kind of way. No, this is clearly a miracle, but we don't know exactly how Jesus did it. So there's different theories. You could say that maybe there's some sort of change in the water molecules, or maybe there's some sort of special change in Jesus' feet that enables him to walk on the water. C.S. Lewis has some really interesting comments about this this miracle in his book called Miracles. And he basically says that the created water, God created the water in Genesis, and it was like the water in the Sea of Galilee was waiting for its creator to set foot on it so that it could then reshuffle itself, rearrange itself to accommodate its own creator. So he's got some really amazing comments he makes there in that book called Miracles. John now tells us they were frightened. Now, we know from the other Gospels, the main reason they're frightened is because they think Jesus is a ghost. Now, they probably don't think it's the ghost of Jesus because they know Jesus is alive, but they, in the dark and in the wind, they just see something coming towards them, so they think it's some sort of ghost. Verse 20, Jesus said, "It is I, do not be afraid." So the basic meaning here is, stop freaking out, I'm not a ghost. He wants them to calm down. But there's more to this as well. He says, "It is I." And in Greek, that is ego I me, which is the divine name. That can be translated as I am. The name of God that's revealed at the burning bush. So it seems like this is a kind of a theophany. It's an appearance of God, and Jesus is presenting himself as God. And we can see this in several ways, because if you look at Job chapter 9, verse 8, it says, "I, God, walk upon the sea." So maybe when the disciples realized it was Jesus, they might have recognized that only God has this power. So this scene of Jesus walking on the water is not just any old miracle. It probably would have had particular significance to the apostles and the original readers of these gospels. They would have seen it as something only God can do, particularly because Jesus says, "Do not be afraid." And that's often something that God himself says when there's some sort of appearance of God in the Old Testament. Now, in Matthew's version of this story, at this point, we see Peter walk out to Jesus on the water, but we don't have Peter at all mentioned in this version. We go straight to verse 21. The disciples were for taking him into the boat. That's a funny translation. What it actually says there more literally is the disciples were glad to take him into the boat. So the disciples are relieved to see him, and they realize it is in fact Jesus. Now, in fact, Mark's gospel tells us that when Jesus gets in, the wind ceases, the storm stops. So presumably, God stops the wind when Jesus gets aboard in order to help the disciples see that Jesus has power over nature. John now tells us they were glad to take him into the boat, but in no time it reached the shore at the place they were making for. More literally, what it actually says is immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. So it's like as soon as Jesus got in the boat, they reached the land straight away. There's another kind of miracle going on here. They immediately hit the land as soon as Jesus got in the boat. They met their goal. Again, there could be a reference here to Psalm 107 verse 30, which is, "God brought them to the harbor they longed for." It's from the same psalm about how God delivers his people. So this is sort of a partial explanation of why John narrates this story a bit differently to the others. He leaves out some details, probably because the framework that he's working with mostly is Psalm 107. So he's emphasizing these aspects of Psalm 107 about how God delivers his people He wants his readers to see that Jesus is God, Jesus is delivering his people. And he knows that most of his audience will read the other Gospels anyway and fill in the other details. So all in one day here, Jesus has fed the 5,000, he's walked on water, he's displaying his power over creation in both of these miracles. So not only is Jesus prophet and king, and certainly the people recognize him by this stage as a prophet and a king, that in fact they try to take him and make him their king, but Jesus here goes a step further. He shows the apostles that he's God himself. He has power over nature. He does things that only God can do. These two miracles are going to set the context for what he's going to say in the discourse in the next part of John chapter 6. So we're getting right up to the really important Eucharistic discourse, and these miracles set the backdrop for that and what he's going to say in that discourse. Now, what about the disciples? Well, Mark's gospel tells us at the end of this story that the disciples are completely baffled and they're amazed by this event. And Matthew's version tells us that they worship him. But if we put the two accounts together, it's like they worship him because they know that he's something special and they call him the Son of God. But mentally, they still don't really recognize the significance of the miracles. They still don't really get it. So the disciples are not really sure what to make of all this. That's the end of John's version, and the story continues in the coming verses. In fact, in the next verse, verse 22, it picks up the following day. So Jesus does a whole series of things across a couple of days, basically. There's no catechism references for us to look at today. There are some catechism paragraphs that link to Matthew and Mark's version, but not to John's version. So we'll leave it there for today. I hope you've learned something new, and we're going to continue in John chapter 6 in the coming days.